Welcome to the Engagement Fit Drive podcast. We're so happy to have you join us. And together with Tracy, Andrew, and Claire, let's make bringing your drives to life practical and fun. In our Drives and Action episodes, we'll share stories of drives at play in everyday scenarios so you can relate and gain deeper understanding of your drives. In our Driving Impact episodes, we'll sit down with incredible guests who are using the Drive framework and tools to create meaningful impact, both professionally and personally. Whether you're here to better understand yourself, your team, or simply curious about living a thriving and inspired life, you're in the right place. So let's dive in.
Hello, and welcome back to our Engagement Fit Drive podcast. In this episode, we are going to be unpacking the supporter drive. And I hope you've had the opportunity to listen to our last episode where we spoke about coordinator and sniper drives.
We're really pleased to have you come and listen to our podcast. We hope that you are finding it valuable in the content we're sharing with you. Today, we're going to have a look at the supporter drive, and we're going to have a comprehensive look there. I'd like to start by defining what the supporter drive is. As a supporter, you especially tend to get things done when you know who needs what by when, you are sure that you have an important supporting role to play. You may have a huge capacity to deliver on your commitments and may struggle to say no or to set healthy boundaries at times or in certain situations. You probably take your work very personally and as a result may not respond well to criticism. However, you are likely very committed to do what you take on and to hold yourself to high standards. Because of this drive, you will need satisfactory feedback from others on what you committed to, in order to get reassurance that your delivery met or surpassed the required expectations. If you feel you have let someone down, you will feel intense guilt. Your strongest asset is your dependability, ownership, and supportive nature. Supporters are extremely reliable and take full ownership and responsibility for their work. They thrive in conditions where they are counted on to deliver work personally and where they are trusted and mandated to do so without micromanagement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Let's have a look at the supporter drive needs. So first need is to be trusted and to deliver, to take ownership, and clarity on who needs what by when.
Thank you for that very descriptive definition, Andrew, of the supporter drive. I'm going to say a few words, and I want you to really think about whether this resonates with you. Reliable, dependable, responsible, ownership, deliver, support. Those are all key words for this drive. As we have mentioned in earlier podcasts about booster drives, that you have this double whammy of the effectiveness of this drive. Let's have a look at some of the booster drives that go hand in hand with our supporter. We have spoken about our caretaker drive before. When we have supporter and caretaker together, think about this. They are both highly supportive of individuals' needs. They are both relational drives. Caretakers will sense individuals' needs and emotions intuitively, while supporters respond to individuals' spoken needs. Our supporter and finisher both are reliable and have a lot of endurance for hard work. Finishers are internally motivated and take a clinical approach to their work, whereas supporters are externally motivated by who needs what and by when. And then our supporter first responder. Here we have a combination where both are highly responsive and easily triggered by external events. First responders respond with urgency to what's happening now in the moment, which may or may not involve people, while supporters respond with commitment.
Thank you, Tracy, for defining those boosters. Before we move on to a discussion around this, we'd like to give you some words or statements that would represent when this drive is mastered and what this drive would look like mismanaged. A mastered supporter drive is reliable, committed, understands who needs what and by when. They have clear boundaries. They take psychological ownership. They deliver on commitments. They are accountable and supportive. It is important to also know when this drive is mismanaged. Typically, you would see that in people who struggle to say no. They undervalue their own priorities, have a tendency to micromanage others. Very often, guilt-driven, they take on too much. Burnout becomes a big risk. They could potentially be enablers. They struggle to delegate and take criticism personally.
Wow. Andrew, that is a lot. I can see now why we're definitely unpacking this drive on its own. It's a lot to get your head around if you do have this drive strong. Andrew, we know that supporter drive is very strong for you. Do you want to share your personal experience with having this as a dominant drive?
Yes, thanks, Trace. I think what I have really appreciated learning around this drive is that everybody can take responsibility, but this particular drive, energy, is responsibility on steroids. It definitely needs a lot to manage it effectively. If you don't manage this drive effectively, it can be a brutal slave master. Very often you will find that there are many people in the world who have roles in the workplace where this drive is strong for them. They're the people who are very strong at making sure that the work gets done, that things get finished, and that stuff gets done on time, reliably, and to high standards.
So when you say it's on steroids, we know that this is a relational drive. And because of the feelings involved in when you commit to something, it's so much about not disappointing anyone, showing up and taking ownership and making sure that you see it through so as not to disappoint people and yourself. Does this drive also need feedback? Do you need to have acknowledgements of giving your heart and soul to what you take ownership for?
Great question, Tracy, and thanks for highlighting that. So I just wanted to lay out the two highly productive drives in terms of being able to have really strong component to getting things done. That's supporter and finisher. But there's a distinct difference between the two. The finisher drive is internally motivated and it's clinical. It's basically as long as I have goals, and I have a to-do list and I know what I want to achieve, I can get going and do it. And when I've done, I'm energized by that because I can tick something off my list and say it's complete. The supporter drive, on the other hand, is engaged when somebody asks you to do something. Now, that can be both interpersonally and in a work context. And the supporter drive is different to the finisher drive in that you take psychological ownership of what you're tasked to do. When you say yes or when you agree and you take on the responsibility and the commitment of doing what you've been tasked to do, the only time you will let go of that responsibility and there's a transfer of ownership from yourself back to the person who asked it is when you have checked in with them that the work has been done as the other person intended and to the standard that they intended. But until such time, you own that process. Now, very often, as with finisher, these two drives have a strong component around your capacity to get things done. And as we discussed in the last episode, we were talking about capacity as a coordinator. And you are very effective as a coordinator by your ability to delegate to others. And therefore, you have the capacity to handle multiple things at once. With both supporter and finisher, it's around you getting it done. So the big thing with supporter is you need to be very clear on when something is needed. Because a supporter takes psychological ownership of what they've been asked to do, and the time component, when do you need it by, is not clear, then a person with the supporter drive being highly responsible will prioritize what you've asked them to do above their own priorities. And obviously, the more you take on in a day and the more overcommitted you become, you hold yourself accountable to getting that stuff done because somebody else has asked you to do. And you also have your own responsibilities. And if you're not careful, you'll be the person staying until 3 o'clock in the morning to get something done because you're committed to have it done by tomorrow.
I think for myself, what I would like to hear a little bit more about is that psychological ownership as a supporter. What does it actually look and feel like for someone that's not a supporter or a strong or dominant supporter? What does psychological ownership look like?
I think that's a very important clarification. There are aspects of this drive that tie strongly into the concept of ownership. When something is mine, it's something that I want to hold. And you will typically find a strong correlation with this drive and your identity or your reputation. If that is important to you and valuable to you, which it is for most people, and because you don't want to let people down, there might be times when you get feedback on your work that might be a bit critical or something that you feel you're being attacked by because you take such high responsibility and ownership of what you've been asked to do. It's important to understand that the feedback you're getting is not a direct attack on you as a person, your identity or your reputation. It's just feedback on what could possibly need to change as far as your work is concerned. But I think the aspect of psychological ownership is not wanting to let people down. Therefore, I own this process until it's done.
Andrew, for clarity, can I add in psychological? It actually is related to the mental and emotional state of a person.
So I think it's important to understand this emotion of guilt and why you might feel guilty. So when somebody comes along and says to you, will you do this for me? And your instant reaction is, I really would rather not. But you feel guilty and therefore you agree to do something that you shouldn't be doing or is not your responsibility. Or the other aspect to which guilt might come into play is that you're feeling that you're letting someone down. And it's very important to understand guilt and how it plays out in this particular drive.
I have a question then around the guilt. Is guilt a trigger then for other emotions? So with guilt comes all the other emotions.
There are a number of reasons why other emotions might come into play. If we consider a situation where another emotion might show up, you are taking on a lot of responsibility, you're overcommitting yourself and starting to feel like you running out of capacity. And you might start to feel resentment towards the fact that it's always you that gets asked to do jobs. It's something we all need to be aware of. When you don't manage this drive properly and you don't have healthy boundaries and you don't understand what your responsibility is, other people will start to notice that you are very trustworthy and very reliable. The tendency could be that people start delegating their own responsibility onto you. You might not be aware of that. And one day you start waking up and realizing, my goodness, I've got a lot on my plate. Since when did that become my responsibility?
Got it. Thank you.
We have to just make it clear that this is a relating drive. That means that the way you behave and show up with this drive is you are supportive and helpful. And that leads everything that you do. You're not leading with your thinking. Is this going to take up too much of my time? Do I have time to do this? You lead with the supportive, helpful part of you that is always willing to assist. You will get involved in various activities or with people because you need to be part of a support system. So that is why you easily are there to assist, to support, and getting overloaded and taking on too much commitments because you haven't thought about it. You haven't thought about all these yeses that you are saying.
Yes.
I think if we can then now help our listeners go, right, what do we do with all of this? What do we do with this supportive behavior that finds it difficult to get back to rational thinking about what they're taking on?
Can I take on that, Jesse? Sorry, Andrew.
No,
what I want to find out from you then is, where does assertiveness fit in for a supporter?
I think assertiveness for a supporter would be in your ability to communicate your own needs and what's important to you, no matter what position you might have in a company. You play a supportive role and you're wanting to be able to help people and you're wanting to be able to support in many different functions and roles. But the assertiveness component would be around taking responsibility for how you can show up in a positive way with that supportive role by defining clearly what you need from others. And just to the point where you are assigned work to do, when you know that you have a lot of stuff on your plate in a day and people are making demands in the workplace, some of that assertiveness or backing yourself would be from the point of view of saying, okay, that's fine. I can absolutely help you here. When do you need this by? If they say we need it today, for example, then it's going back to the person who's asking and saying, okay, I really would like to help you and I can help you, but these are the priorities and the deadlines that I have on that I'm responsible to deliver today. What should I let go of so that I can prioritize your request? And just being able to communicate that and to make others aware of what you're working on can be the game changer in being able to manage this effectively.
Can I jump in, guys, and just share something from the perspective of somebody having this drive strong and they're in a managerial position? How I like to help and coach people through this is we've got to remember that the supporter drive, because of this relational drive, is to make sure everything's okay and everything's working and everything is going to get done. So they very easily jump in and take over doing the work that is somebody else's. So we can talk about boundaries just now, but when they know that you can play a supportive role, but you're not going to play the supporter as in getting in there and physically doing the work and getting it done. You're going to stand back and support more from a mentor place, more of a, bring me this thing that you're doing, show me the first part of it. Okay, I'll check it and then give it back to you and you can carry on. But the supporter very easily will take it on again if it's not being done properly, because remember, they don't want to let the next person down the line down, that will take ownership of that. That's where in the managerial position, They've got to learn that's not their role. You know, then they start enabling and stop empowering their team.
A very good point, Tracy. And I think just something else to bear in mind with that as well. I'll use first responder as a classic example. The first responder engage and are really phenomenal when it comes to urgent need in the moment, but they need pressure to be able to engage. Now, when we're talking deadlines, you will typically find that a first responder, if they are unaware and unconscious of something, if they have said the deadline is in 2 weeks' time, the first responder will possibly do that at midnight on the day before it's due. When you're working with a supporter who's highly responsible, they also need input from the first responder. It's no good that you get that at 7 a.m. and it's due by 8 a.m. the next morning. The supporter doesn't have the time to do that. Another way that a supporter can help people understand their needs and requirements is to say to other people, this is the deadline, but I need it a week before that time so that the other people on my team have the time and space to do the due diligence that is required. So by the time we meet the deadline, everyone's had effective input.
Nice, nice.
Just one final thing to put out there so we can also discuss this. In terms of managing this drive, one of the things we like to help people understand is learning the value of pushing the pause button before you respond to a request that's made on you. And that's not just at work, but also in your personal life. It could look like somebody asks you to do something and your response would be, yes, absolutely. I will be able to help you. Just give me a few minutes. I'll get back to you. And some of the things you need to consider in terms of whether this is my responsibility or not, is ask yourself the following questions. Is this something I should take on? Often we say, oh, I really struggle to say no. The reality is that you are saying no. You're just not aware of what you're saying no to. Because when you say yes, you are saying no to something else. One needs to have a balanced and holistic view of their lives. The more you take on might have a detrimental effect on family time, fitness, health, and other important areas in your life. It's critically important that you also understand what is important to you. Other question you should ask, is this something I should be doing? Or is this person potentially offloading their responsibility onto me? Now, the question is, if I take this on, what will I have to give up? And it'll always be that case. If I take this on, what will it cost me? There's always a cost. And the final question might be, is the price worth paying? And if you have been through that checklist, then absolutely engage with the person if you feel it's the right thing to do. But if for any reason, like capacity, or I don't have the resources or the time, then clearly communicate to that person, I'd love to help you. I just can't do it today. The challenge is not to feel guilty that you've actually said that.
Great questions, Andrew. Really great questions. And I just want to remind anyone listening that they're a supporter is exactly that, the power of that pause. You have the time to ask those questions and get out of this immediate need to support and help and just rationalize a little bit. One of the things I always say to people is that if you're unsure, say no, because then you can always go and say yes. But if you say yes first, you're never going to go and say no.
Great thing, Tracy. I also, one of the other things that's particularly valuable in terms of this particular drive and very effective with finisher as well is make your personal life and your work life one schedule. And then you schedule the things that are important to you in a day. Family time and time to go and exercise and time to think and all those other things that add value to your life. when those are in the same schedule, then it'll help you to balance the commitments that you commit to in your personal life and in your work life.
Yes, it's getting an understanding of exactly who you are, what you need, how you function, what your capacity is. Again, this is going to be very unique to every person, but that is how you identify your boundaries. What is important to you? What do you need to get done in a day to keep your cup full, where you're not going to start feeling burnt out and resentful? So what do your boundaries look like to you? So Andrew, as we've been discussing at length on the support to drive, I was just wondering, do you have any tips on how they could manage some of this part of this drive?
Thanks, Tracy. So one of the things that I've found incredibly valuable around understanding this drive better is how this can play into dependency and being an enabler. And the way that looks is that none of us want people we know well or love to experience pain or to experience some of the negative consequences that might happen from choices that they've made. And because of the very caring, supportive component of this drive, if you're not aware of how this plays into creating dependency, one could start saving other people from necessary consequences they need to experience for decisions that they've made. And we want to stop and save them from those consequences because we don't want them to suffer or to experience pain. And it is a well-meaning side of this drive, but to understand that stepping in and saving people from consequences actually causes more harm, because if people consistently don't learn from decisions they've made or taking responsibility for what they are responsible for, then the problem escalates and grows. That's the first aspect that I think is important, and it's very well intentioned. It's coming from a good place, from everything that is right about this drive. Just need to manage it.
And can I just add, Andrew, that with all the drives, when we are aware of our drives, when we get our 34-page report about our drives and just the awareness of where we can tend to go, I think that is so valuable. That even begins to start change. So I don't want anyone feeling overwhelmed. How are they going to work through this? Is the mere fact that you are now understand that this is how you operate, that it's an unconscious level, and that awareness will already be helping you redirect some of the things you're going to do.
We've discussed the concept of healthy and effective boundaries here, and that is critically important. Those boundaries are there for your protection. We as coaches work a lot with people in understanding what clear and healthy boundaries look like and why you need to put them in place. One or two aspects around boundaries. If you're going to put a boundary, you need to be able to enforce it. And there needs to be a consequence for someone breaking that boundary. And it's important with this drive because although this is a relating drive from the perspective that it supports, it also falls into the domain of accomplishing as well. It's all about reliable delivery and whatever it takes to deliver on time to high standards to what you've committed to.
We get a lot of questions about boundaries. People really struggle with this. How do they set boundaries? I just want to encourage everyone and just to share that our boundaries are already there. The definition of boundary is a line that distinguishes where we end and someone else starts. So your boundaries are already there. It's just a case of, are you living up to what is important to you? It's not that difficult when you understand that they're already there. It's not walls that we have to put up. We don't have to push people out. When do you stop crossing the line? When you're now operating out of your authentic self, out of the things that you believe in, and you start doing your people pleasing. And we know that boundaries exist because that's why we start feeling resentment. That's why we start getting burnt out, because we're not thinking about where our boundary line is.
One thing I found very helpful was this question of, what am I responsible for? Our boundary is the body and the skin we live in. Everything within our body is our responsibility.
About boundaries, some of the lessons that I've learned around boundaries is that those boundaries are there. When you respect your own boundaries, you teach other people how to respect them as well. And if they don't like the boundaries, when you start respecting your own boundaries, then that boundary was necessary.
Thank you for sharing.
And that's very helpful for a supporter to know that when you start enforcing and respecting your own boundaries, people will respect it as well. And if they don't like it, then those boundaries are definitely necessary.
Very good. So I think the final aspect that we want to explore is delegation. In this drive framework, the only contrasting drive that supporter has is coordinator. Now, your coordinators are the natural delegators. If they didn't delegate, they wouldn't have the capacity to get done in a day what they do. Now, the supporter may battle to delegate. Other drives will influence it, and life skill will influence that. What is the reason why supporters may battle to delegate? And that is because when you delegate it, remember, you've taken psychological ownership for it, and you have a level of standards and an expectation on others of what that work should look like. Supporters hate to be micromanaged, but mismanaged can be the worst micromanagers on the planet, because I'm telling Claire, for example, to do something, I'm going to be checking in with her all the time. Have you done it yet? Is it to my expectation? Is it to my standard? If not, the tendency may be that old mindset kicks in. If you want something done, do it yourself. And that's where you need awareness. If you consistently take responsibility away from other people, not only are you training them to not take responsibility, but you are also never creating space in your capacity for you to do more important things.
At a leadership level as well, coaching a lot of leaders is that they take ownership, but they will not delegate. Or if they do delegate, then they're going to micromanage, but they always end up taking it back. And as a leader, you want your people to grow. By taking it back, you are stealing the opportunity for growth. You're actually taking the opportunity away for them to grow. They are fully dependent on you, and you do end up getting to the point of almost complete burnout. One way that you can manage the delegation process is to ask them instead of telling them by when you need it back. And I'll give an example. So I can say to you, I've got this. This is the deadline. When do you think I can have it back in order for me to check and we can still have a meeting about it before I submit? Instead of saying, I've got a deadline, this needs to be done, give it to me by a certain time, they actually buy into that process, number one. But when they buy into it, you can also then hold them accountable to it. And you've got enough time in case you need to fix anything. You've got more than enough time, and you can negotiate on the time frame. So if they give you a time and it's an hour before submission, obviously you're not going to accept it. But if they give you something that you can work with, it makes it easier. So that's helpful.
Wow. I think we have given some amazing insight into this drive and a lot of tips. I really feel that we've done justice to the supporter drive. It's been such a wonderful journey making this with my team, my Drive Team podcast buddies, Andrew and Claire. Thank you for your time today and everything that we've covered. We will see you next time. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much, Claire and Tracy. One final point I want to make, and it's true for all drives, and especially with this drive. These things you don't get right overnight. It takes time, it takes transition, it takes intention. But the more you invest in it and the better you manage the drive, the more it becomes a strength as you add skill, knowledge, and experience. You can contribute and make a meaningful impact through all these wonderful drives that make up this framework. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you, Claire and Tracy. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast with us.
Thanks for joining us on this exciting journey of self-discovery and fulfillment. We hope you found inspiration, practical takeaways, and maybe a deeper understanding of how drives work in action. If you want to discover your drives, head over to engagementfit.com and take the drive assessment. If you love this episode, remember to hit the subscribe button. We'd also love to hear your thoughts. So leave us a review or share this episode with someone who's ready to unlock their drives and thrive. Until next time, keep driving towards a life of meaningful impact.